Hey everybody, and welcome back to From the Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Lavin and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing this week?
Doing pretty good.
Weather sucks.
Yeah, it's just been so weird.
It needs to be like 10 degrees colder, so it's actual snow, or it needs to fuck off.
Yeah, there's no one.
Yeah. Global warming would definitely come in handy right now.
I mean, I'd prefer snow, but nothing's worse than icy rain.
Yeah. Just miserable all around.
Mm-hmm. Hail, giant hail. That's probably worse.
Well, then one could say that is the largest of the icy rains. So
yes, there's a different whole subgroup. Yes. All right. So promote extend trade first. And on this date back in 1962, President John F. Kennedy extended the Cuban embargo to include all goods. Previously, there was an exemption for food and for medicine, but he said no. And that's robbed us of a lot of things, including getting to see some of the greatest Cuban ball players that never defected. So if we could promote or extend or trade these Cuban legends, who are we going to pick? And I guess, promote, extend, trade. In this case, trade is we send them back to Cuba.
Oh, no.
Please. No pressure.
Extend is we give them that visa, and promote is their visa, expire. Or no, extend will be we give them that green card.
Mm-hmm.
And promote would be, they get the visa, but they have to go back.
God damn.
So anyway, first is Alfredo Despaigne. He was an outfielder for the Alazanes de Granma, the horses, more specifically the chestnut mares, which I think is very poetic. Over 12 seasons from 2004 to 2016, he hit
350. I was going to say, I thought he was familiar. Okay.
Yeah. He still plays now, actually. He's been playing in Japan.
Yeah, fine.
But he is a cumulative 352, 456, 655 hitter with 239 homers, 800 RBI, 59 stolen bases in 93 tries, 545 walks, and 430 strikeouts. Next up is Omar Linares. He's a third baseman. He primarily played for the Vaqueros de Pinar de Rijo. They are the tobacco farmers, another good name. He has a cumulative 384, 524, 666 line over 16 seasons from 1985 to 2001.
Well, I'm extending him, period. Mark of the Beast.
Exactly.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
I'm done. Yep.
Pretty much. And another thing that you will definitely like about him. So 172 homers, 584 RBI, 84 stolen bases in 121 attempts, 714 walks, 254 strikeouts.
Jeez.
You like that walk to strikeout ratio?
That's get him out of this league.
Usable.
And last but not least is Frederick Cepeda. He is an outfielder who primarily played for the Gallos de Sancti Spiritus, the Roosters, and he has a cumulative 331, 483, 563 batting line in 24 seasons from 1997 until today. He's still out there playing. 275 homers, 1,067 RBI, 34 out of 68 stolen bases, 1,582 walks, 784 strikeouts. So I think we're all extending Linares just because a 666 slugging percentage.
Yeah, it's hard to say no to that.
Yeah. So who are we
keeping?
We're
all going straight to hell.
Yeah, that's okay.
Wait, we're Met fans. We're already there.
That's very true. It comes down to Despaigne and Cepeda, and they're both very similar. They're both outfielders. They both, are relative or more recent players. They both have a lot of international experience. They both played in Japan.
Flip a coin.
I think I'm extending. Despaigne. I think he's my choice.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Despondy too, because his numbers are just a bit better. He has basically, you know, he didn't walk. He walks a little bit less than Cepeda, and he strikes out a bit more. But
I think he outweighs it with the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. He has more power. He has more speed. And on the international, what's a good word? On the international stage, he's been the captain of the Cuban national team, which is, you know, very big honor. So
yeah, he's like a pretty like well-known player considering his never played in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because even as soon as you said that name, I was like, I know him. You know, like, mm-hmm. like I knew the name immediately.
Once I figured out that you weren't talking about Adrisimer Despon, I knew who you meant, but...
No.
I remember him. Did he no-hit the Mets, or they actually...
He almost no-hit them.
Yeah, they got a hit in, like, the ninth inning or something.
The eighth inning, yeah, when he was on the Padres, and they still didn't have a no-hitter.
Yeah.
Those soft-tossing lefties at the Mets are just like, oh, I can't do it!
That was like a soft-tossing right-hander.
So they made a deal, like with the devil, that anyone who throws below 93 or whatever, they can't hit them no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In order to get the franchise to exist.
Well, Shea did what he had to do, I guess. Also, back in the day, you know, throwing over 93, that'll never happen.
They were like, yeah, think of the downside. There's none. Everyone tops out there.
Big whoops. All right, so we're going to finish up our discussion of our prospect list today. The other main national outlets pretty much have all their lists released as well. The only exception is FanGraphs. So first thing we're going to do, let's compare our lists to theirs. Baseball Prospectus, our list and theirs are like almost mirror images. 1 to 7 are the same. The first difference is 8, where they have Alexander Ramirez, and we have Nick Plummer. And Baseball Prospectus, they published a list in November before Plummer even signed, whereas we didn't start our rollout until New Year's, and we retroactively added Plummer in. So I'm guessing that if they could have included Plummer, they would have, and they probably would have put him. Yeah, they probably would have put him at 8 as well.
Which I'm pretty sure he was in that range for them. Like,
yeah. So basically our top 10 is, I mean, they only go concretely 1 to 10, whereas we have the 25. So our lists are very pretty much the same. And full disclosure, obviously, we're very close to the guys at BP. Jeffrey Paternostro, obviously, he used to write here at Amazing Avenue. That's how he got his start. Jared Seidler, he's written a couple of guests.
He has wrote him.
He's written a couple of guest articles on Amazing Avenue here and there over the years. I've run into both of them randomly at games. You know, we talk a lot. I bounce ideas.
I've been on their podcast.
Yes, you've been on the podcast. They've been on our podcast. You know, we're our own entity here, but, you know, there's overlap because we're, you know, seeing the same things. We're talking to each other. So it's no real surprise that, you know, our list and their list is very similar.
It's also not, this isn't a system at the top that has a ton of variance, right? Like if you were looking at, oh, I'm trying to come up with a name here. I don't know, like the Cubs system or something, you could probably make some arguments mm-hmm. for different orderings at the top, but the Mets system, it's like, all right, 1 through 7 or 8 is pretty much set. And then after that, it kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. this year, now looking at Baseball America's next, this year, basically same thing happened with them. Their list is also published back in early November. Plummer's missing, but he would have likely been in their top 10. Since, you know, 1 to 9 is basically all the same names over and over and just slight variations. Our list and theirs are the same, 1 through 6. It deviates at 7, which is around where Plummer would be slotted in. So, you know, yada, yada, yada. The biggest difference, though, is their inclusion of Joel Diaz at 9, whereas he was unranked by us and technically would have been 32 based on the tallies of our votes
of everybody. I pushed him up to 23.
So what is your thought? What are you guys' thoughts on Diaz? Not necessarily as a prospect, but being ranked number 9 on like the Mets prospect list.
Is it defensible? Yes, because the system is bad. Would I put him that high? Obviously not, because I don't like ranking guys who we have no stateside information on that high. Like, this is how you get Robert Dominguez, or how Jason Dominguez gets turned into a top 50 prospect, even though he's very much not. But, you know, that's a whole other topic. So
Vicente Lupo.
Yeah. Kenny Hernandez. So I get it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but we also just said, like, anything past 7 or 8 in this system is random, so whatever.
I also feel like they have an ability to get information on those guys that I just don't. Like,
that is absolutely true.
Like they are the go-tos for IFA-type guys, and I was talking about this elsewhere to someone else, but, like, I can't in good conscience rate a guy like that because I don't know. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. The only thing I know about him is what the Mets are pushing. So, like, how am I supposed to say, like, how am I supposed to agree with him? I don't know if he's good. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I won't know if he's good until next. Maybe he pops. Maybe he's amazing and he goes into the top 15 and I look stupid. But I have to just go on what I know and what I could see. And maybe that's flawed and maybe that's not how I'm supposed to do it. But which is a larger discussion. But, like, how the fuck am I supposed to know how good he is? The Mets are telling me how good he is. And I don't necessarily want to trust the team, you know, whoever it is. Because they're not going to go say, oh, this guy sucks. To anyone.
That's just, I mean, there's definitely potential there.
Oh, sure. Like, he's a name to watch for me and for everyone else, but he'll make his debut in the States or in the DS or whatever, and then I'll be able to get more information on him. But until then, go off Baseball America.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it's just he's too, like you're saying, we just have too little information about him, and what we do have, like, statistically, is just very irrelevant. Like, it looks awesome that he had a 0.54 ERA in 50.1 innings as a 17-year-old in the DSL. Like, that's awesome. Great.
I mean, good.
But you know what? Remember Jose Medina? There were two Jose Medinas, one a pitcher and one the outfielder. Yeah. All right, the pitcher Jose Medina in the same DSL a couple of years – well, at this point, it's like 10 years ago, I guess. But he was 16 years old, and he had a – 0.35 ERA in 52 innings in the DSL. So it's like, yeah, and his career did not pan out. I mean, his stuff was far inferior to Joel Diaz's, but, like, if the numbers weren't, like, you know, if it wasn't a zero in front of that 5-4, it would be a lot less interesting, and it wouldn't pop out off the page as much, and I think there wouldn't be as much hype for him, because stuff-wise, it's just very generic young pitcher, you know?
Yep. He's one of those dudes who should be on everyone's radar, and if you're comfortable ranking him there, I get it, but also, I can't.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
The stats are, like, particularly meaningless in, like, the Dominican League, because they, like, only keep stats for, like, certain games that they're playing. You know?
It's weird. It's like a...
It's not like a real schedule. It's like they'll play scrimmages and then games, and then it's all arbitrary, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, that is the, I'm not going to say it's a red flag or anything like that, but that is, like, the biggest, like, whoa thing on the Baseball America list as compared to our, you know, thoughts and everything.
I basically ranked him solely on, like, I said, hey, let me check any fun DSL performances. I'm like, oh, 62-9 strikeout walk ratio. Yeah, you can go in the 20s.
No, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
and probably, like, that's one of the things that we will talk about later, but I should have done too, you know. But
there is definite, but like Thomas was saying, there's definite potential there, but we don't have enough information to, we don't have enough independent information to be like, wow, this guy is literally the 9th best pitcher in this entire organization, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he might be one day, God willing. MLB prospect pipeline. Now, last one. They haven't released a true 2022 list yet, but they do readjust their previous year's lists, you know, mid-season, end of season, everything close enough. Nothing really crazy with them either. You know, they have Viandros a little lower than everyone else. He's 6 instead of 4, but that's, you know, it's whatever. They have Ramirez in front of Lee and Palmer, which we and most other places have the opposite. But again, it's whatever. And they have Robert Dominguez in at 10, and that's kind of a situation similar to Diaz. I think that's a little more defensible. Because
I think that's fucking ludicrous, honestly.
Well, I'm just saying, as compared to Diaz, if you're going to rank, you know, Diaz 9 and you're going to rank Dominguez 10th, I think you have more of a solid footing ranking Dominguez 10th than you do ranking Diaz 9.
I disagree with that too, honestly. I think, is the range of outcomes for Diaz broad? It's very much a Schrodinger's cat situation, right? We haven't observed the Schrodinger's cat that is Diaz. So the range of outcomes is wide, and there's a high-end outcome there. Dominguez, we got some complex looks, and they were fucking bad. And he's already 20. The velocity didn't hold. Like, the absence of evidence is better than the presence of bad evidence, to me, at least.
That's a fair way of looking. I was looking at the opposite way. At least we have some evidence of what he is, as opposed to Joel Diaz, which we have like 3 GIFs, you know?
3 grainy GIFs from like very far away.
Well, blame Rob Manfred for that. There's a lot of things we could blame Rob Manfred for. That's one of them. Well, with all that in mind, like, what is, you know, we'll move on to like the next segment now, just kind of like a retrospective. What kind of broad philosophies do you guys kind of use when you're making up your lists? Like, do you put more stock in numbers as opposed to just, you know, what random sources from scouts and eyewitnesses or whatever are saying? Do you like proximity to the majors as opposed to all potential? Like, where do you guys, like, what's your sweet spots and everything? I'll give an example. So for me, like, I definitely weigh present a little bit more than potential. Like, I'll use Matthew Allen for example. I put him a little further down because there is some uncertainty about his return from Tommy John and everything, and how long it's going to take him to come back and regain his fastball and curveball and everything like that. So I'm a little more cautious, and I'm a little hesitant to put him as high as some other people did. I like to emphasize, like, individual tools, like Brian Maguire and Levi David, for example. They have those ungodly curveballs. There's also a lot of warts for both of them. But I think that it's easier to teach a guy how to, like, harness that power than to teach a guy how to throw something like that to begin with, you know? Yep. Like, IFAs, signings that happened in mid-January, like, we already had our lists done and everything already, so they kind of weren't eligible. But even if they were, even if the signing period was back over the summer, I don't think I would have ranked them at all, like Simon Juan, the Nernst. Yeah, because like we were saying before, you know, it's all potential. And how do you rank a guy, you know, a 16-year-old kid who's never even suited up before, but he does have high potential, possible potential, higher than
does
some...
he? Like, we don't know.
Right,
like,
that's the thing. Like, he's said to have potential by guys that know. So, like, okay, I'll take their word for it. But there is a good chance that he doesn't live up to that potential. So is he a better player than someone that maybe has a little less potential, but they are a little further on in their development and they've proven, like, okay, they supposedly had power and, like, wow, they are showing it, you know?
Yeah, but all those IFA guys are like, oh, yes, he has the bat of Mike Trout and the glove of Willie May. And I'm just like, all right, whatever, I don't care anymore. Just, like, as soon as you start doing stuff like that, like – oh, he's a switch hitting Andrew Jones. I'm like, okay, we're out. We're done here. We don't have to continue this conversation.
Because
it's all puff pieces by teams and stuff who want you to think the guy's good. And maybe he is, and of course some of them are, but also, like, I could rank Simon Juan in 2 years when he hits 350 in the DSL. You know what I mean? like I don't have to rush to rank the 16-year-old kid who they signed 2 days ago. Like,
I mean, I definitely have more faith in BA's DSL rankings than MLB pipelines. No. But even they are probably mostly relying on team sources because these guys get hidden for years
and
at a time.
Those dudes are not like in the DR 6 months out of you're watching them. Like, that's just the reality of the situation.
Mm-hmm. I think I, more than everyone else, lean more on the numbers. A, because I'm a mediocre at best scout, and B, that's just like my thing. So for instance, like, I look a lot at, I mean, I kind of do the Sandy Alderson move of, I'm just going to sort by strikeouts. I actually sort by strikeouts minus walks. So I'm a little bit than Sandy circa 2015, at least. But then I also like to think about major league role a lot and finally what we're best at fixing at the major league level. Which is why, for instance, I might be lower on a guy like Ronnie Mauricio, because that's not something that gets fixed at the major league level, as opposed to, oh, there aren't even good examples in the – like Travis Blankenhorn maybe I'm higher on because I see the flaws there as fixable and I see an immediate major league role. So I guess my point is I just lean more on stats questions and think about approach for hitters a lot more than – swing aesthetics or things like that, which I'm not saying is right, just the way I go about this.
No, there is no right or wrong. It's just what you value more and think is more important. And you bring up also a very interesting point that there's two ways of like looking at all this kind of stuff. You can look at it in a vacuum. You could just say like, okay, here are these players that are in the minor leagues. Give a ranking of, okay, who is the best and who is, you know, and gradually getting worse, whatever. And then you could also add in the factor of like, okay, these players are ultimately gunning for jobs in the major league. Like, certain situations, certain guys have more of a chance to actually get that, you know. So is a guy that, you know, is an okay prospect. And he, you know, like look at it like a reliever or something, like guys' profiles that get called up and down fairly regularly. Is a guy like that more of a success as a prospect and as such a better prospect because he actually reaches the majors than a guy like Ronnie Mauricio or Shervian Newton that have like all this limitless potential, but they, in Newton's case, hopefully not Mauricio's case, that could flame out, mm-hmm. You know?
I think it's an argument for, like, looking at the floor of a prospect, too. Like, no one really cares about a prospect's floor, and I get why, because it's not, like, exciting. Like, no one ever thinks about, like, that's just boring. But also, it matters, because if the floor is the bottom of nothing, then you get nothing out of the – like, there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. Like, if Mauricio goes wrong, he's not even going to make the majors, or he won't even be, like, a good contributor. Like, he just might be a bad – major league baseball player, but there's some dudes who you would look at them and be like, yeah, even if he doesn't reach a ceiling, there's a floor of like a utility player or something. And like that stuff matters too, because mm-hmm. even if the he busts out, like a Jurickson Profar is a bust, but he could play, you know, mm-hmm. like he's not a star, he's not even a starter, but that's a valuable player on good baseball teams constantly. And he'll always be considered a bust because people were like, he's the best player ever, but you know, that the Padres don't care.
How long has he been playing? Like 10 years now?
Yeah, he debuted in 2012. How old is Jurickson Profar?
Like 29.
28.
He's 28.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
And he's been in our consciousness forever, I feel like. Uh-huh. I feel like he's been, like, ever since I, like, really started following baseball, that was, like, a guy on the cover of magazines and shit. And now he's, like, a cool utility player for the Padres, and that's, like, fun.
I think the other thing, and I'll add this as like my final comment on how I rank these guys, is a positional element to it, in that I'm more willing to push up marginal pitchers, say Eric Orsi, Thomas DePucci, Adam Aller, than marginal hitters like Carlos Cortez or, I don't know, like Nick Mayer or someone like that. Because I think on the major league side, it's easier to leverage your marginal pitchers than your marginal hitters. It's more important to have like 17 arms than it is to have a couple extra Carlos Cortezes lying around. So that factors into my ranking as well.
Carlos Cortez brings up a good point in general for me too, because like that's a dude who's very obviously a good minor league baseball player, like especially now. Mm-hmm. But like you could just look at him, like you watch him and you're like, he's not going to be a good major league player. Like it doesn't matter that he's hitting well. Like you could easily, like, if you're just scouting the stat lines there, you could be like, oh, he hit three, whatever, he's going to be good. No, like, he's not. Like, I'm telling you, he's not going to be. And, like, you have to rank him because of what he did, but also you kind of know that it's not going to get anywhere, and those are the ones that are weird because, like, he's a quad A player probably, and those guys exist in the world, and they're hard to parse.
Very true, very true.
I like to think of things like, I like to think of what a player's, like, mean outcome is, and then based on what I see, you know, or scout-wise or in the numbers, how likely I think it is that they, you know, beat that 50th percentile, you know, outcome. So, like, I don't know. Like Matt Allen, 50th percentile outcome, you know, pretty good starter, but, or I guess if you were to compare Matt Allen versus JT Ginn, both have the same-ish 50th percentile outcome, like mm-hmm. pretty good big league starter, but I see significantly more upside in Allen, therefore he's significantly higher on the list, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. No, that makes sense for sure.
And then keep doing that all the way down.
Yeah, that kind of plays into what Thomas was saying about floor and everything.
Yeah, like I think that's underrated in these discussions because rightfully so, everyone wants to discuss ceiling. But
right, it's not fun to be like, yeah, nope, we're going down the list 1 to 20, 1 to 25, 1 to 30, whatever. Nope, 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 nope. Like none of these guys are going to make it. Although the Mets have had a very good success rate for minor leaguers the last like five, well, not really the last decade, I guess. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, going back like the Harveys and the Wheelers and
they've had a shocking amount of success.
Yeah, yeah.
For how bad their process has been, is like the best way to put it, I think.
Well, because I feel like prospects are like either really good or just total non.
Yeah, pretty much. It's all
like,
or nothing.
Like they never get that median outcome. Like, yeah, this guy's a good bench player. Like that guy just doesn't exist. The Mets have to pay him $3 million because they can't develop it. But they've developed DeGrom, you know. And like Conforto was a really good player for a long time outside of last year, but I think that was a fluke. And like Nimmo and guys like that. But there's never really they don't get the call ups of the. I was going to say Jake Cronenworth, but he's like a starter. But you, like go those like median type guys who end up really something or end up being like useful. Like I feel like the Mets never have like Luis Guillorme, and that's it. Like and he's a utility infielder, you know.
And that's Blankenhorn.
Love.
I mean,
yeah, like I think Blankenhorn's a guy like that. If they develop that, then that'd be perfect. And I mean Guillorme's because of his glove. It's not like the Mets taught him how to field. He knew how to do that before.
Okay, I think part of why that is because the Mets have historically done very well at the top of the draft and not particularly well anywhere else.
That's a very kind way of putting that there, Ken.
So, you know, of course you end up with some very high highs and some, like, freak happenings in there, too, like DeGrom.
Of course, but that's like, I mean, I don't know how much the Mets did that, and it's just...
They just never had the depth because... Well, they draft well up top. They've
right.
struggled down the line.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is, you know, that's basically how we made our list. And anyone that I mean, I don't like we've mentioned many times before, like the teams 1 through 9 or so, like it's basically the same exact names, very minimal variations in it from source to source to source, list to list to list. And then from, you know, 10 to however far down the individual list was going, like you could really just plug in whatever you want, whatever names you want based on just your own personal feelings and what you're looking for and everything. So for everyone out there, you know, I hope that kind of explains why, you know, 10 through 25 are where they are on our list. And then, you know, obviously other lists out there, people have different methodologies. So that's why, you know, you'll see some variance.
I kind of wish we did tiers instead of ranking lists, but I get why we do lists.
Mm-hmm. Tradition.
And just people want lists. It's just more satisfying that way.
The big game is almost here, and your team probably isn't part of it. But that doesn't mean you have to miss out on the fun. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers 56-1 odds on either team. That's right, just bet $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins. DraftKings Sportsbook just went live in New York, meaning you can bet from almost a third of the country. And if sports betting still isn't allowed in your state, play DraftKings Daily Fantasy Football Contest for Super Bowl 56. New customers can get a free shot at a $1 million top prize with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use the promo code SBNation, and get 56-1 odds on either team. Bet just $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code SBNation at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56. 21 and over, minimum age and location requirements vary by jurisdiction. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for a full list of requirements and state-specific responsible gaming resources. Void where prohibited. Gambling problems? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Tennessee, call or text the TN Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
All right, now, obviously the lists are done and everything like that. When did we finish? I think we submitted our lists in the end of November. I think it was around Thanksgiving, right?
Yes.
All right, so basically 2 months have passed. We've had time to chew on things. Really, is not there really hasn't been much new information out there. But, you know, you think about things, you look at things, you say to yourself, and, you know, if you guys could have one do-over where you could change where you put a guy in the list, good or bad, you know, move a guy up, move a guy down, who would it be? Why? You know, well, what's going on? What's your thought process?
I forgot to rank Jose Peroza because I'm bad at my job. And so I would like to redo that and put him, like, I don't know, 17th.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Lucas is bad at his job.
Yep, yep. Send emails to amazingavenue@whatever.com and tell Chris to fire me immediately.
Let's see. I ranked Jose Peroza 18. Ken did not rank him either. And Thomas ranked him 26.
I put him 26.
Yes.
26. I wish I put him higher. I wish I put him on the actual list. I think he deserves to be.
Yeah, it's probably my mulligan as well.
Let's see. He would be 20. If we went past 25, he would have come in at 29. Between Stanley Consuegra and Carlos Rincon.
Yeah, I think he's better than both of those dudes.
Yeah, I think he's better. I don't think anything about those dudes. So,
looking at our list of 25 here, I'd rather have him than Robert Dominguez, Levi David. Carlos Cortez is probably better than Jose Peroza. I hate to admit it.
I don't think so.
He's probably a better player right now. I don't know if he's a better prospect.
Right. I'd rather have Blankenhorn, but I was the high guy on Blankenhorn, whatever. Rather have them Junior Santos, Brian Matoyer, Thomas Cipucci, Josh. Like, wow, we were way too low on Peroza.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those things where I feel like we could feel bad about that one later on in the year.
All right. Thomas, who's your guy?
That my mulligan. I do kind of wish I put Peroza higher. Just because, like, I actually have seen him and think that there's a little something there, and I put him 26. But, like, the bottom of my list is just kind of boring. Like, I didn't do any of the, like, exciting IFA guy at the bottom. I just put, like, Carlos Cortez 24 and Mangum 25, and that's, like, who cares about that? You know? Well, like, where's the fun in that type of ranking? Because I don't think either of those guys are crazy high-level, like, ceiling guys. I think Mangum could be a fourth outfielder, and Cortez is going to be a kind of quad A, like I said before, a cup of coffee guy who gets called up for like 2 weeks and then gets sent back down and gets called up when someone else gets hurt, or he's a September call-up taxi squad thing, whatever they do with the new CBA. But, like, I don't know. I just kind of wish I had a little more fun at the bottom of the list, because I picked low ceiling guys, and who cares about that at 25, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's not, like, that's also not really what lists are for. It's supposed to be the top 25 guys, but when I was talking about floor and how important that is, like, ceiling is what we're here for. You're here to put Alvarez one because he's the best prospect in the system, and to talk about how good he could be. Like, that's part of the magic in it. And I was just kind of like, look at these floor guys.
I mean, it is part of it, but yeah, it is a non-exciting part of it.
Yeah, like would anyone really miss me not putting, I guess I would, people think Cortez is good, but like, it's just kind of boring, like I said. And
it'd be good content.
Yeah. Because you could easily, I think, make the case of Cortez not being a top 25 prospect in the system, but that's a different conversation.
All right, so that was yours. Lucas's, Ken, your same thing with Peroza. Mine is going to be Dominic Hamill. And maybe I'm crazy, but I would put him in the top 10, probably at 10.
That's an interesting one. I do like Hamill, but
I don't know, like, I really just wanted to jot down, like, you know, a little paragraph or two about it, and I ended up, like, going too overboard. And, like, I don't know if, like, I just hyped myself, I guess, you know, like, that kind of thing. Like, I have a fucking, like, 1,000-page document here now about it. I mean, one thing about is that we do have the analytical data for him, and it's actually interesting. This is just kind of like a kind of meta thing, but it's interesting to see how we, in the future, you know, like, since this stuff is really starting to just trickle in, how we're going to start looking at guys differently with the data that we, you know, between the guys that we have some data for and the guys that we don't have any data for. Because, you know, there could be players out there that have whatever the actual scouting report is. Like, you know, his fastball moves very well, and it's like, okay, cool. And then you have a guy, yeah, his fastball moves well. It has a spin rate of 27,000 RPM, and you're just like, holy shit, oh my god, you know?
Mm-hmm, so yeah,
that, I think, is part of it. But if we didn't have Hamill's StatCast dead, I think he'd just kind of be like that kind of thing. Like, okay, cool, nothing really jumps out at you. He's like an average fastball for a right-handed pitcher, curveball, slider, changeup, like the whole kitchen sink. You know, some are a little bit above average, some are a little bit below average. And then there's not really too much of a track record from his time at Dallas Baptist. But then when you plug in that StatCast data, it's like, whoa, like an above average backspin rate fastball, plus or even plus curve slider, good numbers for a changeup. You know, it's like I didn't really put those kinds of things into perspective when I first made my list. And I didn't hype myself into Hamill because of all these numbers. And, you know, now I kind of did.
But also, like, I think that's how we, as at least the people who do talk about the major leagues on this podcast as well, like, I look at those numbers for major leaguers as well as their how they play on the field, like how I watch them. Mm-hmm. So it's only natural that we want to do that for prospects, too. Like, that's just I know Lucas does it all the time, and also I think you got to marry the two, like the eye test and the numbers, because there's some eye test. Like Eric Campbell was a numbers guy, and you could just clearly see that he wasn't going to be actually good, no matter what his exit velocity was, and it's because they were reading it wrong and all that stuff. But like, but still, like sometimes there's the analytic darlings in other sports that just they don't actually translate it to actual production, and sometimes they do, and it's you need to marry the two. And I think when prospects are able to do that, when we're able to do that with prospects, we'll get better lists and just more. You'll be able to see those guys coming, like the Seth Lugos of the world. We would have seen him coming if we had this stuff, you know, just because how we would have seen the numbers. We would have known that that stuff is there.
Now, you're probably going to say I'm crazy, and maybe I am crazy for saying this, but looking at his numbers and then just looking at other numbers and everything like that, you know who he actually lines up very favorably with? You ready for this? Uh-oh. Max Meyer. Max Meyer. Hear me out. Bull take here. And I'm not saying that he is as good as Max Meyer, because he is not. There's one key difference, and it is a very key difference. But same age, same build, right-handers, very similar mechanics, weirdly enough. You know, the surface numbers, strikeouts, and walks, very similar. Meyer has more of a track record in college. You know, obviously he was drafted a year earlier also, so he has professional experience now and good experience. The Marlins pushed him. But
yes.
Hamill sits in the low to mid-90s, like 90 to 94. He tops out like 95, 96. Meyer, on the other hand, sits like 93, 97, tops at 98. That's the big difference, and that's also a very major difference. I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter, because those couple of miles per hour do matter. But then when you look under the hood a little bit, Meyer's spin rate and Hamill's spin rate on the fastball, they're almost identical, 2,500 RPM. So you like to see that, you know, when your guy is very similar to a guy that is consensus like 25 to 40 in all of baseball this year. Slider-wise, Hamill has a low 80s slider at that gyroscopic kind of bend, sits around 3,000 RPM. Meyer, his slider is a little different. It sits in the high 80s, but it has a little less spin to it. It's 2,700 RPM. Change-ups are weird. I mean, you have to have more than just like the spin rate. You need to look at it with conjunction, like the axis and the efficiency, all that kind of stuff that we don't have the data for. But Hamill's change up spin rate, it's 1300, whereas Meyer's is around 2000. They're two different pitches. They do why can't I talk? They do two different things. A lower spin rate change up, it kind of has that classic fade. Whereas a higher spin rate changeup, it has like that sudden jerk, like Devin Williams, where his changeup is kind of like, okay, yoink. But, you know, like I said, Meyer is a better prospect than Hamill is right now. But there's a lot to like when you see that your guy, you know, a lot of the numbers under the hood are lining up with a guy like Meyer. And, you know, Hamill is a guy that is analytically minded himself. And he's open to using whatever, you know, at the time at Dallas Baptist, whatever they could offer him. With the Mets, whatever they could offer him, which is hopefully more. But call me crazy, but I think that 2022 is going to be, you know, a lot of people are going to be shocked.
That's pretty bold.
If he's Kirkland Brand's Mike Meyer, I'm fine with that. Like, that's a good outcome for the Mets.
Max Meyer has, like, probably the best breaking ball in the minors. This is a take.
We'll see. I'll have
is
to
Is that not what
this.
We're here for, Lucas?
Uh-huh. The takes.
Listen, Lucas is Mr. Hot Take Machine, so.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Mr. Bad Take Machine, excuse me. I'll have to remember all of this when we do our predictions for the season.
Yes.
That's a fun one, though.
Yep, here's wishing. All right, well, that is wrapping up our top prospect coverage for 2022. So, I mean, it's the beginning of February. We got, like, a month and a half to go before minor league baseball starts. So hopefully that month and a half goes by flies by pretty quickly. If anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Seipler. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken is at ken1191. And Thomas is at zmetseason, S-Z-N. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.